Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Pro Savings Days are on at Lowe's. Get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, my Lowe's Pro Rewards members get an additional 5% off when you buy 5 or more select GE, Whirlpool, and Electrolux kitchen or laundry major appliances. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 123. Discount valid to my Lowe's Pro Rewards members only. Exclusions and other restrictions apply. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See associate or Lowe's.com for details. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Did you know that the 2025 draft class is the first in the common draft era, so since 1967, to combine for more than 13,000 scrimmage yards through the first 10 weeks of the season? They have 13,814, and their 104 combined touchdowns are 18 ahead of any other class. This is The Numbers Game. I'm Cynthia Freeland, and let's break down the remaining 14 NFL games for Week 11. I'm back from Berlin. It was a very quick and awesome trip. I hadn't been there since I was a little girl, like 8 years old. And the wall came down and my dad and I chiseled, my mom too, but my dad, we forced him to do all the chiseling. We chiseled away at the wall. So it was cool to go back there as an adult and see things through a different lens. It is always good and very good for me to recalibrate and reset based on having new experiences. So it was cool to go back and see like this experience I had as a kid, which left a very big impact on me, and then go back. Anyways, so I'm really grateful for that experience. And it meant we did skip TNF this week. So Monday Night Football is also in this episode so that we can do our mid-season extra show, which will come out shortly. Before we dive into week 11, let's look back at my week 10 results. There were 14 total games last week. My model went 10-4 straight up, 7-6-1 against the spread, and 3-11 on totals. That brings my season to 63.1% straight up, 52.3% against the spread, and 56.4% on totals. The last international game of the season will take place in Madrid at the home of Real Madrid, and it will feature two quarterbacks from Hawaii who actually attended the same high school. I didn't know that before doing this episode, but Marcus Mariota and Tua Tagovailoa went to the same high school in Hawaii. Who knew? Anyways, Miami is the technical home team in this one. They're also favored by 2.5 points. The total is 47.5 points. My model picks a very close finish. Miami wins 24-23. Let's start with the Commanders offense against the Dolphins defense, because that's where we always start. The difference when Laremy Tunsil is in or out of the game is massive, as in Tunsil has allowed just a 7.4 pressure rate. That's ninth lowest among the 37 left tackles who played at least 100 pass blocking snaps. And he has not allowed a sack since week 13 of 2024. Tunsil forecast to match up against Dolphins pass rusher Bradley Chubb, who has 33 total pressures this season, which is more than double the next closest defender on the Dolphins team. And last week, he generated 8 pressures against the Bills. That was his most since 2023. So overall this season, his pressure rate is 17%, which is 11th highest among the 95 edge rushers who played at least 100 pass rushing snaps. But we didn't know exactly what it was going to look like without Jalen Phillips. He's traded away. He's now an Eagle. And we were asking who would really step up. It was a big game. The Bills are very good at stopping pressure, and Bradley Chubb delivered. So that matchup is going to be key in this one to keep Marcus Mariota clean. Switching over to the other side, which is, of course, Miami's offense against Washington's defense. Tua Tagovailoa may not have the most deep passing attempts in the league this season, but it's gone well when he has passed deep, to the tune of 0.69 EPA per deep pass, the seventh most. Maybe they increase the number of deep passes in this one because Washington's defense has almost an 8% completion percentage over expected allowed. Two deep passes, the sixth highest, along with the sixth most EPA per deep pass at 0.83. Now, Tua, 56% of his passing yards this season, they've come after the catch, the seventh highest rate in the league. And Washington, they've also allowed 7 yards of yak per reception this season, the second most in the NFL. Bottom line, I have a 1-point win forecast for Miami, 24-23. How does Washington keep it closer? Why? Well, part of the reason why is because Dan Quinn's taken over the play calling duties on the defense. So he's now head coach, basically defensive coordinator, defensive play caller. All of those things are now his responsibility. That is interesting because Tua Tagovailoa does lead the league with 13 interceptions. However, what tips the scales in favor of Miami? Devon Achane, of course. There's potentially rain in the forecast, so keep an eye on that. But Achane is the only player with at least 700 rushing yards and 300 receiving yards this season. His versatility and his ability to keep the ball on the ground and keep turnovers from happening really tips the scales. Since we get breakfast football, we need three stats to track for Spain. They're in order of most to least probable. Number one, Devon Achane to have at least 20 touches. He averages 14.3 rushes and 4.9 receptions per game, but he has at least 5 receptions in 3 of the past 3 games and at least 16 rushes in 3 of his last 5 games. My point is use him. It makes a lot of sense. The Dolphins, by the way, they're 3-0 this season when Achane's had at least 20 touches. Number two, Marcus Mariota to have at least 202 passing yards. He's thrown 43% of his pass attempts downfield. That's 10 plus air yards. That's the highest rate this season. He's completed 55% of such passes, the 6th highest rate. He also has a 10% completion percentage over expected. I know I said it's raining, but it's okay. It's going to be over 202 yards. And 7 different Commander pass catchers have at least a 10% air yard share when Mariota has been the quarterback. Now, number 3, Zach Ertz to have at least 4 receptions. He's met or exceeded this number in 4 of his last 4 games. And with Mariota as his quarterback, his air yard share is 20%. He has 173 air yards. That's the highest of those Washington pass catchers. I told you, Mariota spreads it around, but Zach Ertz is a probable target. It's dog games time. For each week in November, we're going to support animals in need by picking winners, all of us, for the 3 biggest underdog games of the week. So all you have to do to participate, it's easy. Comment here on YouTube or in my socials, C Freeland on X, Cynthia Freeland on Instagram, with the 3 teams you think will win. Easy. And the name of an animal rescue. You nailed it last week. There were over 100 submissions, and we'll pick the winner at the end of this segment. Everything's ready. It's all ready to go here. So just to recap, all we're going to do here is for each correct pick, I wrote it on a piece of paper and I added it to my helmet, mix them around, and I'll pick one out of the helmet at the end of the segment and donate $100 to that charity. Easy peasy, right? Okay, let's get to it. The first dog game features a dog mascot, which I love the poetry here. It's Baltimore at Cleveland, and Baltimore is favored by 8 points. The total in this one, 40.5. I have Baltimore winning by 9, 25 to 16. Starting with the Ravens offense against the Browns defense, well, Lamar Jackson has increased his quick pass rate since returning from injury. In weeks 9 and 10, he's thrown passes under 2.5 seconds 56% of the time. That's an increase from the 43% rate he averaged in weeks 1 through 4. He's getting the ball in 2.79 seconds now compared to 2.87 in weeks 1 through 4. In the past 2 weeks, he's also completed 21 of 29 quick passes for 198 yards and a touchdown. Basically, I'm just making a point about how to get away from Myles Garrett because he has 11 sacks, which is tied for the most despite only playing 9 games, and he leads the NFL with 17 tackles for loss. Switching over to the other side, which is, of course, Cleveland's offense against Baltimore's defense, Dylan Gabriel made his first start in week 5, and he's used play action on 20% of his dropbacks since then. What happens when he does? 4.8 yards per play action pass, that's 3rd fewest, and negative 0.19 EPA per dropback with play action, that is 6th fewest. Baltimore's defense, they have been good against play action passes, allowing just a negative 0.07 EPA per dropback, 5th fewest, and a 76.2 passer rating against play action since week 6. That's the 5th lowest. Why do I say week 6? It was their first week with Alohi Gilman. And by the way, he is a veteran. So thank you to all of the veterans. I know Veterans Day has already happened, but I really appreciate all of the people who have served. You mean more to all of us than we could imagine, especially after going abroad. I got a chance to see World War II veterans when I was in Berlin, and I can't even tell you how grateful I am to all who have served. But back to the task at hand, the bottom line here, this is the second matchup between these two teams this season after Baltimore's week 2 win. My model says this go around, it's 25 to 16. Baltimore's defense has allowed just 19 points or fewer in 4 straight games, and the Browns' offense is averaging just 4.1 yards per play, which, if it holds for the season, would be the lowest for any team since 2008. The one to watch here, though, Quinshon Judkins to have at least 83 scrimmage yards. Judkins has averaged 3.8 yards after contact in the run game alone this season, and his yards after contact total, which is 525, are 94% of his total yards. That's the 3rd highest among running backs. The Ravens have allowed 678 yards after contact to running backs this season, good for 3.7 per carry, and that's the 8th highest in the league. Dog game number two is Packers at Giants. The Packers are 7-point road favorites, and the total in this one, 43.5. What does my model say? Green Bay wins it 24-16. Starting with the Packers offense against that Giant defense, well, Jordan Love has used play action on 28% of his dropbacks at the eighth highest rate in the league. He's averaging 8.9 yards per play action pass, that's seventh most, and 0.28 EPA per dropback, that's sixth most. The Giants are allowing the 10th highest completion percentage to play action, 71%, and the 11th highest passer rating to it, 112. Switching over to the other side, the no longer new news here, but New York now led by head coach Mike Kafka, interim head coach Mike Kafka. He was the offensive coordinator against a Green Bay defense who is led by Jeff Hafley. Jeff Hafley could be a very hot name come this next coaching cycle. So this is a fun chess match here. Now, Jameis Winston will be the starter, and you have to go back to 2024 to get the data on him, where he averaged 9.2 air yards per attempt, the third highest rate in the league, and he completed 9 of 30 deep throws, so 20 plus air yarders. 7 of those were touchdowns. That's a 23% touchdown conversion rate, the highest in the league. Now, the Packers defense, they've allowed just a 64.7 passer rating, 2 deep passes, the 10th lowest in the league. And let's talk about Micah Parsons. 48 pressures, that's tied for the second most in the league. A 17.6 pressure percentage, that's the lowest of his career. But he's been double-teamed on a career-high 21.3% of his pass rush snaps. Rashawn Gary, on the other side, has been double-teamed on a career-low 3.4% of his pass rush snaps. So the Micah Parsons effect is actually kind of first level, which is him himself, and then second level, which is Rashawn Gary. And then third level, it does have implications for why the Packers aren't giving up many big plays, explosive plays. Bottom line in this one, I have Green Bay by 8, 24-16. The Giants have a bunch of injuries, and they've already allowed 4 more sacks in 3 of their past 4 games. They've allowed a 38% pressure percentage on their quarterback, the 8th highest in the league. And although Jameis Winston does have like crazy upside situations, we talked about those deep passes, he does have a lot of downside as well, which bears out in my score. And also, this isn't a risk I'm taking for my fantasy team. This isn't the defense to test that out against. As for my one to watch here, you didn't think I was going to go back on my promise to pick on the Giants run defense until they address it even a little, did you? Okay, so watch Josh Jacobs end up in the end zone. Jacobs is the first player in Packers history with 1 or more rushing touchdowns in 8 of their team's first 9 games. And the Giants, just in general, they're allowing 5.5 yards per carry. That's 32nd or last. And 52.1 rushing yards per game. That's 31st, so a little better than last. But don't even get me started on outside runs, or just go back and watch every previous episode. Josh Jacobs, outside run, touchdown. The last dog game of the week is Houston at Tennessee. The Texans are 7-point road favorites. The total in this one, 38.5. I have Houston by 8, 24-16. Here's a stat to tell your friends in this one. This will be the 6th matchup since the 1970 merger between a team with a number one scoring and number one total defense, that's Houston, versus a team with the last ranked scoring and total offense, that's Tennessee. The number one defense, they are 5-0 in the previous 5 matchups. Starting with the Texans offense against the Titans defense, time of possession. This one sort of surprised me. Houston's averaging 32 minutes and 30 seconds. That is 3rd most in the league. Another thing that was a little surprising, they're averaging 247.3 passing yards per game since week 7. They had a week 6 bye that ranks 6th highest in the league. After averaging 198.2 in weeks 1 through 5, that ranked 19th. As of the time of this recording, I'm not exactly sure who the starting quarterback will be, but my score is with Davis Mills under center. If it were CJ Stroud, the discrepancy between points would be even bigger in favor of Houston. Why? Because the Titans defense has given up the 2nd highest completion percentage overall, 72%, along with the 5th highest passer rating at 120.6 and 3rd highest success rating to downfield passes at 58%. On the other side of this matchup, we have Tennessee's offense against Houston's defense. Now, let's talk a little bit about what happens when teams don't blitz Cam Ward. He has a 37% success rate. That's 2nd lowest. A negative 0.23 EPA per dropback. That is 4th fewest. And overall, he's been pressured on 39% of his dropbacks this season, the 8th highest rate in the league. Houston, we know that they're pretty good. They're only blitzing 26% of the time. It's 13th lowest, so it's about 2.5 percentage points below the league average. They have a 33% quarterback pressure rate when they don't blitz. That's 12th highest. And they've allowed negative 0.34 EPA per dropback when they don't blitz. That is the fewest. Their corners are crushing it. They've also allowed just a 34% dropback success rate when they don't blitz. That's 2nd lowest. I told you, corners crushing it. Secondary crushing it. Bottom line here, I have Houston winning 24-16. That's 8 points because of the defense. It's the number one scoring defense. They're allowing just 16.7 points per game. They're the number one total defense, just 261.3 yards allowed per game. And at least one sack and one interception in seven straight games. Will Anderson Jr. alone has one or more sacks in four straight games. And Tennessee's offense, they're last in the NFL with just 14.4 points per game and 244 total yards per game. Their 38 sacks allowed are the most in the NFL, and they've allowed two or more in every single game. The one to watch here, Woody Marks, to have at least 18 receiving yards. He's passed this number in three of his last four games. I wanted to go more in depth about Woody Marks, but since the quarterback is not 100%, the numbers are like just not sure enough. But if you're looking for a good fantasy upside play this week, Woody Marks. Those are the three dog games of the week. So if it were me commenting, I would write straight up Baltimore, Green Bay, Houston. I could also say against the spread I have Baltimore, Green Bay, and Houston. And then I would add Detroit Dog Rescue because that's where my little Clydie came from. So remember to leave your dog picks in the comments or on my socials to get your animal rescue in the mix. Now, the fun part, I'm going to pick from last week. I'm putting it over my head. I can't see anything. Now I can't reach it because it's a little too high for me. All right, here we go. I got my pick. Oh, okay. It says, can you see this? Res Q and Whittle. By the way, I really like the name Whittle. That's so cute. This makes me so happy. I'm going to have my magical editor put the receipt in here. So here we go. Receipt, because Res Q, congratulations on behalf of Whittle. All right, keep picking so that we can have even more winners every single week in November. Congrats, Whittle. Very fun. Before we get back to the games, here are my confidence picks for the week in order. These are just picking winners. So these are straight up who wins or who loses. This doesn't factor in point spreads or totals. You can get those numbers, so ATS and total confidence numbers, on Numbers Game. So numbersga.me. There's a spreadsheet you can download and it gets uploaded every single Wednesday. And you can see exactly where I rank all of the different factors that we're looking at, and you can get player projections there. Do you remember that Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen were both top seven overall picks in the 2018 draft class? Of course, Mayfield went first, Allen went seventh. That's like kind of easy to remember, but did you know that the 2018 draft class has 876 career offensive touchdowns by quarterbacks? That's the second most in the first eight NFL seasons by a quarterback class ever. The 2012 class, they had 963 through their first eight seasons. But that is a good way for us to get into Tampa Bay at Buffalo. We're the home team. The Bills are 5.5-point favorites. The total in this one, 48 points. My model says Bills win it 27-23. Starting with the Bucs offense against the Bills defense. Well, I should say my 4-point margin is if Bucky Irving plays. And right now that's a bit unclear because he was on the practice field this week. So to me, that would indicate that he will be available to play. I have him forecast to be 75% of his like 100% capabilities, but keep an eye on that one as the week evolves. One guy who is banged up but not banged up enough to not play is Baker Mayfield, who's one of three quarterbacks with more than 15 passing touchdowns and fewer than three interceptions this season. The other two, Matthew Stafford and Jalen Hurts. He has a 12-1 touchdown to interception ratio on downfield passes. That's second in the league and the second most downfield touchdown passes behind Sam Darnold. Buffalo's defense, they're being stingier against the pass, just 170.2 passing yards per game allowed. That's third fewest in the league. Looking at Buffalo's offense against Tampa Bay's defense, usually when you think Todd Bowles' defense, you close your eyes and you see inability to run the ball. But this year, not the same. Now, let's look at inside rushes specifically. Why? Because Buffalo runs between the tackles 54% of the time. This is the 13th highest rate. It's about 4 percentage points over the league average. And they've averaged 0.5 rushing yards over expected per inside rush. That's the 8th highest, along with the 7th highest rushing success rate on them at 50%. They're also averaging 1.2 yards before contact per inside rush, the 7th highest rate. Tampa Bay, even though they have Vita Vea, they've allowed 2.5 yards before contact per inside rush. That's the most in the league by 0.8. And they've allowed 1.3 rushing yards over expected per inside rush to running backs. That's the third most in the league. Bottom line in this one, I have Buffalo winning by 4. Remember, if there's no Bucky Irving, that margin would grow. But I want to point out that Tampa Bay's defense is pressuring opposing quarterbacks on 41% of dropbacks. That's the second highest rate in the league. And the Bills offense, they've allowed just a 28% quarterback pressure rate. That's fifth lowest. But you need to watch Jamel Dean, okay? He's allowed a league low 23.7 passer rating in coverage. That's the lowest opponent passer rating by a corner with at least 30 targets in a single season in the next gen stats era. The one to watch here, though, it's James Cook to score a touchdown. I talked about the inside rushing advantage, but just to give a macro note, the Bills are also averaging a league high 153.2 rushing yards per game, Buffalo's most in a season in the Josh Allen era. And we said it before, this isn't a normal Todd Bowles run defense. Next up, it's Cincinnati at Pittsburgh. The Steelers are 5.5-point home favorites. The total in this one, 49 points. My model says a 5-point win for Pittsburgh, 28-23. I love these old head stats. This will be the fifth quarterback matchup since 1950 between two old geezers. 40-plus-year-old quarterbacks. And it's the second time this season. Remember, the Bengals defeated the Steelers when Old Man River took on other old... Just kidding. 33-31 was the final score in Cincinnati. Joe Flacco, Aaron Rodgers, they both had three or more passing touchdowns and 100-plus passer rating in that game. Okay, but now what should we look for in this version of the Bengals offense against this version of the Steelers defense? It's been 4 weeks. What should we watch? One thing I'm watching, T. Higgins against man coverage. He's caught 14 of 26 targets against it for 217 yards. That's tied for the eighth most, and four touchdowns. He has an average of 14.6 air yards per target against man. That's ninth most. And on man coverage targets that travel 10 plus air yards, he has 181 yards. That's tied for the third most, and two of his four touchdowns. The Steelers defense, they've played man about 42% of the time. That's the third highest rate in the league. And overall, they've allowed the most passing yards per game in the NFL with 269.4, which is the most in a single season in Pittsburgh history if it held out through the end of the season. Now, Pittsburgh's offense against Cincy's defense. Aaron Rodgers has been pressured on a league low 22.5% of his dropbacks. He has 17 passing touchdowns without being pressured. That's third most in the league. And Cincinnati, what's their pressure rate? 29.2%, fifth lowest. And they've also allowed a 0.32 EPA per dropback without pressure. That's the seventh most. And to keep my analysis balanced, I need to also add that Cincinnati's defense is allowing 33.3 points per game. That's the most in a single season since 1966. And their 426.6 total yards per game allowed, that's the second most in a single season in the Super Bowl era. So again, probably not Lou Anarumo's fault last year. I had to say that again because it bothers me when they're wrong, people get fired. But I think people do end up in the right place, so maybe he will be head coach in this next coaching cycle. Bottom line, the Steelers even up the season series with the Bengals 28-23. My model values Joe Flacco's ability to pass the ball. He's averaging 313 passing yards per game since being traded to Cincinnati in week six. That's the most in the NFL, and that's what keeps it close. We've seen inconsistencies from the Steelers defense. It has resulted in a lot of yards given up. The one to watch here, though, is Pat Freiermuth to have at least 25 receiving yards. Not because he had 111 last go-around, but over each of the past two games, he's topped this number. And now that Logan Wilson is a Cowboy, that was the Bengals defender, the space that Freiermuth works in is easier to navigate. Moving to Carolina and Atlanta, another rematch here. This time, the Falcons are favored by 3.5 points at home. The total in this one, 42.5 points. My model says Atlanta wins 24-20. Now, a reminder, the Panthers did shut out the Falcons 30-0 in week three. Carolina is 0-2 all time in rematches versus a team that they shut out previously in the same season. Starting with that Panthers offense against the Falcons defense, Bryce Young has completed just 38 of 67 passes for 360 yards, three touchdowns with three interceptions against the Blitz this season. He's been pressured at the fourth highest rate, 53%, and has the third lowest passer rating, 68, against the Blitz. And the Falcons, well, they blitz on 49% of opponent dropbacks. That's the highest rate in the league. The last time out, that was week three, the Falcons blitzed on a season high 63% of dropbacks, and Young completed 9 of 14 for 72 yards. That was a 5.21 yard per attempt against the Blitz. As for Atlanta's confusing offense against Carolina's defense, the Falcons have run outside the tackles on 75% of their rushes this season. That's the highest rate in the NFL by a very wide margin, like almost 13 percentage points. And Bijan Robinson has the highest outside run rate among those rushers, 78%. Tyler Allgeier is second highest at 73%. Now, production has differed between the two running backs, though. Robinson has averaged 5.3 yards per carry on outside runs, Allgeier 3.7. Carolina's defense. They've allowed 4.6 yards per rush on outside runs. That's about middle of the pack, but are holding offenses to the third lowest success rate on such rushes at 33%. Bottom line, Atlanta ties up the season series 24-20. This data is bananas. Are you ready? The Falcons are the only team in the Super Bowl era to lose consecutive games despite having 6-plus sacks and 2-plus takeaways in each game. Getting the win this week has a lot to do with the Falcons' defense. Bryce Young has a 79.7 passer rating this season. That's 31st among 33 qualified quarterbacks, and he's thrown for fewer than 150 passing yards in 5 games. That is the most among starting quarterbacks. The one to watch here, it's Rico Dowdle to have fewer than 109.5 scrimmage yards. This is not any slight to him whatsoever. It's more that his O-line has not been 100% healthy, and it's also because the pace of this game forecast to be slower, as in fewer possessions, and not a game script or score that would project for what 109.5 scrimmage yards would likely require. Monday Night Football rounds out this grouping of games. It is Dallas at Las Vegas. The Cowboys are 3.5-point road favorites. The total in this one, 50.5 points. My model says Cowboys win, but just by 3, 27-24. This particular episode is so full of stats to tell your friends. Let's add another one. That is that the Cowboys are the 5th team all time to play back-to-back on Monday Night Football. Let's start with their offense against the Raiders' defense. Dak Prescott has thrown an intermediate pass, so 10 to 19 air yards, on 20% of his pass attempts. He has a 9.9, so a 10% completion percentage over expected on them. That's the 4th highest in the league. And he's the 3rd most EPA on such passes at 0.78. The Raiders, they have allowed 11.1 yards per intermediate pass this season, the 4th most in the league, and a 0.52 EPA per intermediate pass. That is 6th most. On the other side, so Vegas' offense against Dallas' defense. Ashton Jeanty has been stuffed for a loss or no gain on 29% of his rushes. That's 2nd highest in the league. He's averaged 0.6 yards before contact per carry. That's 8th lowest. But despite this, he has forced a missed tackle at the 3rd highest rate this season, 33%. The Cowboys' defense, they have missed a tackle higher than league average. So 24% of the time, league average is about 23.5%. The news is better for Jeanty in the pass-catching game here, though, because Dallas has allowed the 2nd most yards, 411, the 3rd most yak, 450, and are tied for the 3rd most explosive receptions allowed, 6. They've also given up the 3rd highest success rate to running backs in the pass-catching game at 56%. Bottom line here, I have the Cowboys winning 27-24. There's just too much horsepower in Dallas's passing game to stop them in this matchup. Prescott has targeted tight windows, so less than a yard of separation, on 20% of his attempts. That's the most in the league. And he's at a 38.5% completion percentage. That is 5 percentage points above league average. So in sticky situations, Dak is dealing. Monday Night Football means we do 3 stats to watch. Number 1, George Pickens to haul in at least 5 passes. Pickens has seen 10 of those tight window targets from Dak Prescott, and he's averaged the 3rd most yards per target, 10.2, and the 5th highest catch rate, 52%. I have him down for 5, 57, and a touchdown in more than half of simulations. Number 2, Brock Bowers to have at least 7 receptions. Whoosh! Bowers has the 3rd highest yards run per route average among tight ends at 2.3 yards, and 11% of his routes run have been receptions for first downs, which is also the 3rd highest at his position. Dallas's defense has allowed the 8th highest success rate to tight ends, 59%, and the 7th highest completion percentage, 77%, along with 3 touchdowns and 0 interceptions to tight ends. And number 3, at least 10 combined points to be scored in the first quarter, so both teams, their scores added together. If you are in need, maybe Geno Smith could be a streaming quarterback for the week. Now, that depends on who your starter is, but Geno Smith could have a lot of passing yards in this one. This next grouping of games all happen to be divisional matchups where the spread is about 3 points. In other words, we are in for a great Sunday. Let's start in Minneapolis for the 2nd installment of Bears and Vikings. This time, Minnesota, the home team, is favored by 3 points. The total in this one, 48.5. I have Chicago winning, evening up the series by 1 point, 25-24. Starting with the Bears offense against the Vikings defense. Well, Chicago, they're averaging 147.3 rushing yards per game, 2nd in the league behind only Buffalo. They've had over 170 rushing yards in 3 of their last 4 games after doing that exactly 0 times in weeks 1-6. And outside runs specifically are something that they've been doing 61% of the time, the 2nd highest rate, where they've earned the highest explosive run rate. 21% of outside rushes by running backs have earned an explosive run, so 10 or more yards. Chicago's also averaging 1.3 rushing yards over expected per outside rush by running backs. That's the seventh most. And let's see how Minnesota's defense is faring against them. They're allowing one rushing yard over expected per outside rush this season, the eighth most, along with an explosive run on 14% of outside rushes. That's the 11th highest rate. Switching to the other side, so Minnesota's offense against Chicago's defense, J.J. McCarthy has thrown deep, so 20-plus air yards, on 18.5% of his pass attempts this season. That's the highest rate among quarterbacks with at least 100 total pass attempts. He's targeted Justin Jefferson on 8 of his 20 deep passes, but completed just one of them for 50 yards, along with having 3 interceptions. That's the most such interceptions among quarterback-receiver duos league-wide. Now, across 12 deep passes when targeting the other Vikings receivers, he has 4 completions for 148 yards and a touchdown. Chicago's defense has allowed league highs in completions with 13 and yards with 414 on deep passes since their week 5 bye. As a reminder, in week 1 against the Bears, McCarthy completed 1 of 3 deep pass attempts for a 27-yard touchdown to Aaron Jones. Bottom line, I have the Bears evening out the season series with the Vikings in a nail-biter, 25-24. There will be blitzing by the Vikings. Brian Flores has dialed up the blitz on 45% of opponent dropbacks, the second highest rate in the league, and generated the fourth highest pressure percentage when he does, 40%. Caleb Williams against the blitz, 793 passing yards, 8 touchdowns, and 0 interceptions. He has a 119.2 passer rating against the blitz. So Ben Johnson, you're doing great there yet again. The one to watch here, at least 10 total points scored in the first quarter. J.J. McCarthy has some interesting scripted splits, as in he's done really well when his coach has scripted those plays out ahead of the game. He has a 154.2 passer rating. He's averaged 11.6 yards per attempt in the Vikings' first two drives of each game, compared to a 51% completion percentage with 3 touchdowns to 6 interceptions and a 52.1 passer rating on all other drives. I also like Ben Johnson's experience calling plays against the Vikings to help the Bears score early as well. Stop me if you've heard this one before, but Andy Reid is really excellent coming off of a bye. That means we're going to Kansas City and Denver. This one's at Mile High. Kansas City, the Chiefs are favored by 3.5 points. The total in this one, 44.5. My model says Kansas City wins 23-21. For the record, Reid is really good after a bye. It's just something we kind of say too often. He's 22-4, just so you have the number in his head coaching career. Now, let's go with his team's offense against the Broncos defense to start. This first note isn't necessarily predictive, but it is interesting. Tell your friends, Patrick Mahomes is actually 13-1 in his career against the Broncos. Now, let's get to the stuff that really matters in this matchup. So Patrick Mahomes, he leads the NFL with 513 total yards on scrambles. Denver's defense, they've allowed just 3.2 passing yards per attempt on scrambles. That's the third lowest in the league. Mahomes is averaging a 56.4 completion percentage, 6 yards per attempt, and only an 83.8 passer rating against the blitz. These are all career lows for him. Denver's defense, they have the fifth highest blitz rate at 35%. One edge here for Mahomes is the fact that he leads the NFL with 624 passing yards on the run. It's a sprint. 8 miles an hour is crazy. That's the number we use, but whatever. He has a 133.6 passer rating on the run on the sprint, which is the second highest in the NFL. On the other side of this matchup, so Denver's offense against Kansas City's defense, let's look at Bo Nix and the deep pass, something he's done on 12% of his attempts this season. That's the seventh highest rate in the league, where he has a 26% completion percentage, the fifth lowest in the league, and just a 0.02 EPA per deep pass this season, which is eighth fewest. Kansas City has allowed just 10.5 yards per deep pass attempt this season, the ninth fewest, and a negative 0.02 EPA per deep pass, the seventh fewest. They've also allowed 232 yards and 1 touchdown on deep passes. Both are the top 3, so 3 stingiest, most stingy in the NFL. Just because we're tracking, and this is super interesting to me, let's look at Bo Nix's stats in the fourth quarter. 9 total touchdowns, 40 total first downs, 30 completions of 10 plus yards. All of those are the most or tied for the most in the league. Bottom line, I have Kansas City winning this one by 2 points, 23-21. Now, the Chiefs offense has the most plays at 6.9 and the most time of possession per drive at 3 minutes and 23 seconds, and they're tied for the fewest 3 and outs. Their 70.3 red zone touchdown percentage is also third highest. Why only a 2-point win for KC? Well, I'm worried about their O-line, which has had injuries and missing pieces against this league-leading pressure front 43%, that's their number. That would be the highest in the next gen stats era for a season. Overall, Mahomes has been pressured at just the second lowest rate, 26%, but he has a 39% completion percentage when under pressure, third lowest, compared to 72% when he's not under pressure. So missing pieces to Denver's defense, missing pieces potentially on Kansas City's offense, those two things sort of net out into a two-point win for the Chiefs. The one to watch here is Courtland Sutton to haul in at least four passes. I did make a point about downfield passes, but this number is just too low for the prototype Parcells-like receiver. So obviously Sean Payton came from the Bill Parcells mold. You know what I'm saying? Big-bodied, contested catch guy. This is a big matchup. Go to your big guys here. He's had only four or more receptions in three of his last six games. But remember what I said about the Chiefs' time of possession? This game doesn't forecast for KC to control the clock as well, given the strength of the Denver defense. So perhaps an extra possession or two means Sutton has more targets, which means more opportunities for receptions. The NFC West is the only division with three teams that each have six or more wins. That's Seahawks, Rams, and Niners, all in the same division. So it only makes sense to go there next. Let's start with San Francisco at Arizona, where the Niners are 2.5-point road favorites, and the total in this one is 48.5 points. My model says a 2-point win for the Niners, 24-22. Maybe the model's drunk this week. Lots of very close games. But the Niners offense against the Cardinals defense is where we'll start. Niners, they lead the NFL with 2,614 passing yards and 261.4 passing yards per game this season. They're averaging just 3.5 yards per carry, which is last in the NFL and the fewest in any season with Kyle or Mike Shanahan as a head coach in 29 such seasons. They're the only team without a 20-plus yard carry. Okay, we get it. The Niners have used 21 personnel on 33% of offensive snaps this season. That's the highest rate in the league. So let's talk about George Kittle here because there's something interesting. One, in the run game, we see the team average 4.3 yards per carry when he's there versus 3.2 yards per carry when he's not, in part because they use 21 personnel on 41% of snaps when Kittle is there. Now, the Cardinals defense has used dime on 20% of their snaps overall this season. That's the fourth highest rate in the league. But they switched to base defense at the eighth highest rate, 83%, when facing 21 personnel. What does this all mean? Okay, sure, more guys are going to be in the box, but that's a clear tendency for Shanahan to exploit. As for Arizona's offense against San Francisco's defense, Jacoby Brissett averages 279.5 passing yards per game as the starter. That's the most in the NFL. And Arizona averages 6 more points per game with Brissett as opposed to Kyler Murray. Brissett has a 55% success rate against the blitz. That's tied for the highest rate in the league. The 49ers, they blitzed Matthew Stafford on 49% of his dropbacks in week 10. That's the second highest single game blitz rate of any Robert Saleh defense, like ever. And they're usually around a 28% blitz team. So what does this mean? Saleh is just trying to figure out how to navigate no Nick Bosa, no Fred Warner. And in this case, they are likely not to blitz Brissett as much. My point is, leveling out the defense with so many important missing pieces is a big key to this matchup. Bottom line, I have the Niners by 24-22. Remember, no Marvin Harrison Jr. in this one, which helps the Niners defense out. As of this recording, it's likely to be Mac Jones, but possible for Brock Purdy to return. Either way, San Francisco has a 53% dropback success rate when they are not blitzed this season. Their quarterback does. That's both quarterbacks combined, but it's the fifth highest in the NFL. San Francisco's quarterbacks are also averaging 0.14 EPA per dropback when not blitzed, the eighth most in the league. And Arizona, they blitz just 25% of the time. That's the 11th lowest rate in the league. And they've allowed a 49% dropback success rate without blitzing, the seventh highest. So San Francisco quarterback not facing a blitz has a good opportunity to succeed. The one to watch here, it's Trey McBride to have at least 7 receptions. He's already faced double coverage on 14 routes. That's the third most in the league. And without Harrison Jr., he will command more attention, but he's had at least 7 receptions in 4 of his last 6 games. And I even like the touchdown here too. He's had 5 in 4 games with Brissett as the starter compared to 3 in his previous 21 games with Murray under center. Staying in the NFC West, maybe the best game of the day, it's Seattle at Los Angeles. The Rams are 3-point home favorites. The total here, 48.5 points. I have Seattle pulling off the upset by 1 point, 24-23. Now, the Seahawks and Rams are the only teams with top 5 scoring offenses and defenses, and not only have both teams each won 4 straight games, but both teams have not trailed in a game since week 6. crazy. Starting with the Seahawks offense against the Rams defense. Sam Darnold has been sacked 10 times, which is tied for the fewest. But the Rams defense is top 8 in sacks with 27, and they're number 5 in quarterback hits with 60. Darnold is averaging 10.5 passing yards per attempt against the blitz, which leads the NFL. But the Rams defense, they've only blitzed on 21% of dropbacks. That's the 6th lowest rate. Darnold has 607 yards, 5 touchdowns, and no interceptions on deep passes. That's the 2nd most passing yards that are deep passing yards. And he's tied for the NFL league with 22 completions of 25 or more yards. But the Rams defense, they've allowed just 11 completions of 25 or more yards, which is tied for the 3rd fewest. Darnold leads the NFL with 9.9 passing yards per attempt. That would be the highest by any quarterback in the Super Bowl era. But the Rams defense, they've allowed just 6.1 such yards. That's 6th fewest. And on the other side of this, Los Angeles' offense against Seattle's defense. Well, Matthew Stafford leads the NFL with 269.7 passing yards per game and 25 passing touchdowns. 61% of his completions have been for first downs or touchdowns. That's the highest rate in the NFL. And he has 4 or more passing touchdowns with 0 interceptions in 3 straight games. That's the longest streak in NFL history. He also has 20 passing touchdowns and 0 interceptions against the blitz. That's the best touchdown to interception ratio in the Next Gen Stats era. And he's been blitzed at the 4th highest rate, 33% of the time. However, the Seahawks defense blitzes at the 2nd lowest rate, just 19% of the time, and they've allowed just a 61 opponent passer rating when they've blitzed, which is the lowest in the NFL. Stafford has been pressured on 28% of his dropbacks, the 5th lowest rate, but Seattle's defense has a 40% pressure rate, the 3rd highest, and actually leads the NFL with a 42% pressure rate since week 5. Bottom line in this matchup, I have the upset, Seattle by 1, 24-23. Seattle's defense is and has gotten healthier, and they've allowed 20 or fewer points in 7 games, along with having 32 sacks, which is tied for the 2nd most. They have 4 players with 10 or more quarterback hits. That's the most in the NFL. And they're the only team with 6 players to have 20-plus quarterback pressures apiece. Further, the Rams defense had a 45% pressure rate in weeks 1 through 4. That was the 4th highest. But it's been under 30% since week 5, which is the 7th lowest. The one to watch here, Kyren Williams to have at least 14 rushing attempts. His season average is 16.2, and he's had at least 14 in 3 of his last 5 games. I wanted to talk about pass catchers for the Rams here, but their injury report reads expected to play for Davante Adams, so I went run game instead to not get burnt later. Also, here's a wrinkle to watch that doesn't impact the attempt number, but rather the location and potential result of the rush. The Rams have used an inside rush 54% of the time, the 3rd highest rate, where they have a negative 0.15 EPA per inside rush, the 8th fewest. Seattle is allowing negative 0.23 EPA per inside rush, the 2nd fewest, and they've allowed negative 0.5 rushing yards over expected per inside rush this season. That's the 3rd fewest in the league. So what does this mean? Well, staying committed to the run game, the inside run game, even if it's not yielding them a ton of yards, is part of how they diagnose what's going on with the defense and create opportunities on subsequent downs. So it's not going to be this huge source of yards. I would say Kyren Williams' rushing attempts number and rushing productivity number are 2 different things here. But ultimately, they're learning about the defense to diagnose it, and that's why they have the fewest yards left to go on 3rd down, which has been a very impactful and important thing for this offense. We need some touchdown scores. Let's go with top-end touchdown scores like we did last week. Last week, we did running backs. This week, we need to do wide receivers. All 5 are big names who forecast to have big games and very likely reach pay dirt. Number 1, the Ravens wide receiver Zay Flowers against the Browns. He leads the team with 42 underneath targets. Those are ones of less than 10 air yards. He's caught 36 of them for 291 yards and a touchdown. He also has 222 of those yards after the catch. That's 5th most among wide receivers. And he's gained more yards after the catch than expected on half of such receptions. Number 2, Bucks receiver Emeka Egbuka against the Bills. He has 15 receptions of 20 plus yards. That's 2nd most in the league and leads the NFL with 5 receiving touchdowns on these deep passes. Also, the rookie is one of just 2 players with more than 12 receptions of 20 plus yards. Jackson Smith and Jigba is the other. Number 3, speaking of Jackson. Jackson Smith and Jigba, he forecasts to score against the Rams. He's been targeted on nearly half of his routes run, so 51 of his 108 when facing off coverage this season, so 5 yards or more of cushion. That's good for a target rate of 47%, which is nearly 10 percentage points higher than any other receiver. On these passes, he's gained a league-high 600 yards with 4 touchdowns and over 100 yards more than the next closest receiver when in off coverage. The Rams have aligned their cornerbacks in off coverage on 63% of snaps this season, the sixth highest rate. Number 4, Falcons receiver Drake London against the Panthers. London has been targeted on 33% of his routes against zone coverage. That's the third highest rate. And against it, he's caught 44 of 62 for 557 yards. That's the fifth most among wide receivers. And he also has 3 touchdowns. The Panthers defense has played zone on a league high 85% of defensive snaps. London has also caught 8 of the 12 career passing touchdowns that Michael Penix Jr. has thrown in the NFL. Number 5, Texans wideout Nico Collins against the Titans. Collins leads the Texans with 550 receiving yards and 3 receiving touchdowns. That's actually tied. He's coming off a season high 136 receiving yards on 7 receptions in week 10. Okay, 1 was a Hail Mary, but who cares? But he's had 75 or more receiving yards in each of his last 2 games. The last 2 games are between conference opponents and have playoff implications on both sides. So in the AFC matchup, it's more related to who could potentially make the playoffs. And on the NFC side of things, well, it's likely to impact seeding or who will potentially host a home game in the playoffs. So let's start in Jacksonville, where the Chargers come to town as 3-point road favorites. The total in this one, 43.5 points. My model says Los Angeles wins 23-21. Starting with the Chargers offense against the Jags defense, let's talk about Justin Herbert and play action passes. He's used it on 23% of his dropbacks, the 7th highest rate in the season. He has the 10th best passer rating when using it, 119.8, and a 0.21 EPA per dropback with play action. That's the 11th most in the league. What has the Jags defense done against it? Well, they've allowed the 3rd highest dropback success rate, and that's 59%, and a 0.21 EPA per dropback to play action passes. That's the 8th most. Play action advantage Chargers. And for Jacksonville's offense against Los Angeles's defense, well, one of the things we've seen in the Jags' struggles of late is how the O-line is allowing more and worse pressures on their quarterback. Left tackle Walker Little, he has allowed a 14% pressure rate this season. That is 5th highest among left tackles with at least 100 pass blocks. He projects to match up against the Chargers pass rusher Tui Tupelotu about 60% of the time. That guy has generated the 5th most pressures at 41 and is tied for the 5th most sacks with 8 among all defenders this season. Tupelotu now has 29 more pressures than the next closest Chargers defender, so he is the biggest threat. Bottom line, I have another close one forecast here, but a Charger win 23-21. Keeping both quarterbacks clean will be a major driver of who wins in this one, and the Jags project to keep it closer than expected because Justin Herbert has been hit on an NFL-leading 89 dropbacks. That's 22 more times than the next highest quarterback and the 2nd most hits taken of any quarterback in the first 10 games of a season in the last 20 seasons. The one to watch here is Kamani Vidal to score a touchdown. He leads the team in rushing yards with 404. He's averaging 77.2 per game since taking over in week 6 as the starter, and he has 22 rushing first downs, which is tied for 5th over that span. And last but not least, the Sunday Nighter. It's in Philadelphia at the Link. I am already sweating this one. It's my team versus my Super Bowl pick. It's Detroit at Philadelphia. The Eagles are 2.5-point home favorites. The total in this one, 46.5 points. And what does my model say? A 1-point win for Philadelphia, 24-23. Let's start where we always do, the Lions offense, which is now being called by Dan Campbell against the Eagles defense. Jared Goff has thrown for 980 yards. That's the 5th most on quick passes. He averages a league-high 8.3 yards per attempt on them, and he has the 2nd most touchdown passes thrown with them with 12 touchdowns. The Eagles' defense, they are really good against quick passes. They've allowed just 5.2 yards per attempt against them. That's the 2nd fewest in the league. Now, let's talk about Dan Campbell, the play caller. Last week against Washington, he targeted Jameson Williams more. He used motion more. He didn't ask Jahmyr Gibbs to block in pass protection as much, or at least as much as Johnny Morton did. But again, the Commanders defense, we know they're very vulnerable to deep passes. So the run game in general will matter a ton, actually on both sides of this matchup, but for the Lions specifically, and protection on the interior offensive line will be a huge factor for how effective the Lions offense can be. Here's where the newly added Jalen Phillips for the Eagles defense will or could or forecast to be impactful again. Overall, he has a 17% pressure rate. That's the highest of his career and the ninth highest league-wide. I know some of that was in Miami. He also is tied for the seventh most run stuffs with 6, and he's tied for the eighth most run stops with 18 among edge defenders. So it's going to be another one here where it matters where Jalen Phillips is, just like we saw against the Packers. Switching to Philadelphia's offense against Detroit's defense, Jalen Hurts has been great against man coverage. He has the second most yards per attempt at 9.1, the seventh highest completion rate, 63%, the second most touchdowns, 13, with just one interception against man coverage. The Lions, they use man a league-high amount, 44% of the time so far this season. However, they've been good when they use man. They've allowed the 10th fewest yards per play at 4.9 and the fourth lowest success rate at 37%. Now, I told you the run game will matter for both sides of this. Well, the Lions defense has only missed 8% of their tackles on the ground this season. That's the lowest rate in the league. It follows that they've also allowed just 228 yards after missed tackles. That's the fewest in the league. On design runs, the Lions have recorded the second lowest missed tackle rate, 13%, and allowed only 88 rushing yards after missed tackles. They are the only team to allow under 100 such yards this season. Just to keep track, Saquon Barkley has forced a missed tackle on 20% of his rushes this season. That's the seventh lowest rate at the position. Now, bottom line here. Eagles, they win by a point, 24-23. The tush push and rushing in the red area is the difference maker. Philadelphia is averaging 0.22 EPA per rush in the red zone this season. That's the fourth most in the league. They've earned positive rushing yards over expected on 47% of their rushes in the red area. That's fifth highest in the league. And Detroit has allowed 0.07 EPA per rush in red area rushes this season. That's 13th most. So red area rushing, different than rushing on the whole, especially because there's that whole, you know, tush push thing. We have to do a good for six on this game because it is a really good game. It like hurts and scares my heart, but these are six stats to track for Sunday Night Football in order of most to least probable, but all are probable enough for you to track. Number one, Jahmyr Gibbs to score a touchdown. I said the run game was important, not completely shut down. Fun fact, he's one of just 5 players in NFL history to score more than 40 touchdowns prior to turning 24 years old. Number two, Saquon Barkley to score a touchdown. Same idea that I talked about with the red area rushing situation. Saquon Barkley end zone, that is highly probable. Number three, Jalen Hurts to score a rushing touchdown. Red zone rushing point plus the tush push, you get where I'm going here. Number four, A.J. Brown to catch at least 4 passes. Now, Brown has averaged 3.9 yards per route run against man coverage. That ranks 3rd most in the league. He has 14 catches on 21 targets for 236 yards with 3 touchdowns against man. That is tied for the 5th most such yards. The Lions play man. We talked about it more than any other team. So 4 catches, that feels like a low number for A.J. Brown. Number 5, Jameson Williams to catch at least 4 passes. He hauled in 4 of his targets for 91 yards on plays featuring play action last week against the Commanders. Before last week, Williams had just 4 receptions on 9 targets for 95 yards off of play action passes across the Lions' first 8 games this season. Just so you know, last season, Williams generated the second most receiving yards on play action passes in the league with 568. And by the way, those numbers are just on play action passes, so 4 receptions just total feels like also a very low number. Number 6, Jared Goff to throw for at least 242 yards. I talked play action about J-Mo because the Eagles defense, they have struggled against play action passes, allowing 10 yards per attempt. That's 5th most in the NFL. The Eagles have also allowed a league-high 17.6 yards per attempt against downfield, so 10-plus air yard play action passes. Now, we did it. We got through the entire week. Thank you so much for hanging out. Make sure to come back here. We're going to have a fun, it's going to be a very quick, like 11 points about what to look for going forward in the season. It will drop very soon. So make sure you're tuned into everything going on. And of course that you're subscribed so you don't miss anything. I appreciate you so much. Make sure to get your dog picks in because of course we're going to keep donating to dog charities. Check on Numbers Game, NUMBERSGA.ME for more player projections and all of my scores in a format where you can use them however you want. And of course, we'll be back here with Thursday Night Football for next week very shortly. But most importantly, enjoy the games.